How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is July 30, 2013, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We got news to talk about today. Of course, Raw was taped. We've talked about the results on the show prior, but we'll go over the entire show in detail here. And first off, Dave, how things going?
Oh, everything's pretty good. This has been crazy week, you know, as far as getting stuff done. I mean, it's just all kinds of technical issues here yesterday, and then I had I was gone all day today, which like on a Monday I would never do, but you know, they had a UFC lunch in San Francisco, which is about it's about an hour away, but with traffic it's closer to an hour and a half away. And so we had a luncheon with Cain Velasquez and Junior Dos Santos, which took several hours, and so that was pretty much my day. Actually, it was really cool. I haven't seen Junior Dos Santos in a while. Obviously, I see Cain Velasquez. I mean, not all the time or anything, but from time to time and everything. And two very different personalities. I'll probably do a feature on that at some point. It's just an interesting dynamic between the two of them, because we were both there, and they never laid eyes on each other, but they had no animosity towards each other. It was just a very, it's kind of unique. Like, they're sitting at the same table about five chairs down and never look at each other when, Cain was like on one side, which was actually the side I was on. And he was there for a while and I didn't even know Junior was scheduled to come, but we were there for so long and he wasn't there. And then he came and like, he didn't look at Cain or anything like that. Didn't like, say hi or anything. Neither had any animosity and no interaction whatsoever. But there was none of this, I don't know what you're talking about, but like, no, there was no simmering or no cheap shots or nothing. It's just a very interesting dynamic between them. They fought twice, and I think that they both kind of realize that this is, it's kind of their legacy fight. Because it's probably going to be, these guys are really, there might be one or two other guys in the division, but really, maybe Cormier. I mean, I don't even know who else. Overeem kind of got exposed, if that's the right word. I mean, Overeem got knocked out. I mean, he's still dangerous, but I don't know how, after the way he got knocked out, I don't know if people see him at that level of these two. So they're like the best heavyweights of the era. They've fought twice, each has a win, and a solid win. It wasn't even like one guy won with a one punch knockout, and then in the rematch the other guy dominated for five rounds, complete domination. And they got the third one coming up, and they're going to make changes, and but it's going to be what they're more likely than not. I mean, this is probably going to be the series that they're both going to be remembered for, because I don't know who else is going to take it to both of them at this level that's around right now. And I don't know of any heavyweights coming up that are at that level. And it's going to, I guess Verdum, we'll see. But, so that's kind of the deal there. So that's what happened there.
Nobody had anything interesting to say?
Nah, nothing like nothing really spectacular. Cain's Cain.
Aren't they kind of going around the country and the world? You'd think they'd have built up some sort of talking points by now.
A couple of days. They're doing. They're going to L.A. tomorrow, and then I believe Houston, Texas. That may be it. Maybe there's a New York in there. I'm not sure. There's only a couple. They're only doing a couple of days. They're not doing the overseas stuff or anything like that. Junior's going to be doing Saturday in Brazil, but Cain's not going to Brazil. And, it's not. This wasn't like the others. I think the other cities are more press conferences. This was just a few guys, 10 people, 12 people at lunch. I got to talk a lot to Cain, although, I've talked to him in the past and everything. But we talked, a lot. What you see is what you get, I guess is the best way to put it. He's very nice. He answers every question, but he doesn't start any conversation. Like, if you don't ask, you know what I mean? He won't say anything. He seems, how do I say it? He's like a guy who, I think he's always thinking. He's like in a kind of a zone. He's always thinking, and I'm not sure what he's thinking, but I think it's just he's thinking the fight. And but he doesn't say that. But I think that's what he does. Because I think he's got a lot of pressure on him, but he doesn't act like he's got a lot of pressure on him. And he kind of says, you know, he said like, you know, he's kind of like three guys. You know, he's the guy at home with the daughter. He's the guy in the gym who trains really hard. And then, you know, a couple times a year, he's the fighter. And they're very distinct people. Junior is a lot more fun-loving and all that. You know, it was, you know, an interesting thing is that, you know, we were like at a you know, after dinner, we were at this, or lunch, I should say. We were at this, it's a big tourist place in San Francisco. There's a lot of people. And there was a pretty decent commotion. Not like overwhelming, not like if Hulk Hogan was there or, you know, Muhammad Ali or anything close. I mean, even close. But, you know, it's kind of like people knew that they were somebodies and people kind of knew that they were fighters. But Junior got way more reaction than Kane, even though Kane lives here. And the reason is because, and I really noticed this, is, you know, the guys here, they're kind of like niche guys, kind of, you know, there's people know them and they want their picture with them, blah, blah, blah. But the Brazilian tourists that were in San Francisco, when they saw Junior, you know, they reacted like, oh my God, you know, it's like, I sense that these guys, I guess because the TV visibility, because you know, 20 million people watch Junior's fights. You know, that's not an exaggeration. 21, 22 million people will watch the fight. You know, the big fights that are on Globo. So it's a lot more than you know, in a country of 200 million. So the visibility is much higher in Brazil. So to the Brazilians, they're the Brazilian stars. You know, and Junior is probably maybe number three. You know, I mean, Anderson's obviously number one, and Vitor's probably number two. The Brazilian stars are they're pretty significant stars. The visibility, you know what I mean? They're like public figures. You know, at a bigger level than the UFC fighters are in this country. And it was I kind of knew that, and statistics would kind of tell you that, but seeing it in San Francisco was interesting to see that dynamic, in the sense that, I mean, there was nobody like, you know, like screaming, oh my God, it's Cain Velasquez. You know, I mean, people were coming up to him for pictures and things like that. But with Junior, it was like, you know, it was like it was a TV star or a rock star, maybe not quite a rock star, but you know what I mean? It was a different level of celebrity. Like it was, you know, girls screaming and stuff. That was that. I mean, as far as the fight goes, you know, Junior looked really good against Mark Hunt. So, and he said he overtrained against Kane, and we'll see what happens. You know, Kane's a machine. That's really what he is. He's a machine. Doesn't show any emotion. You think he never gets tired, but he does. But you think he doesn't. You know what I mean? Sometimes people act like he's not human because he's such a machine, but he's human. And, you know, I mean, the first Junior fight showed that. So, anyway, that was kind of it. I don't know. I can't really think of, as far as, you know, there's nothing else. I mean, the only, you know, we talked a lot about, you know, college and everything because, you know, a lot of Kane's teammates in college, you know, a lot of them ended up in MMA. You know, John Moraga was actually good friends with him, which I didn't know. And he just started in the last couple of years because, you know, at his size, you know, there was nowhere for him to go in MMA until, you know, to make money until, you know, these lighter weight classes started opening up. You know, Ryan Bader, CB Dalloway, obviously. And then he was coached by Eric Larkin, and Aaron Simpson and Tom Ortiz. And, you know, Aaron Simpson, of course, fought in UFC. Eric Larkin did some MMA at a lower level. And Tom Ortiz, who was his college wrestling coach, the head coach. I had met Tom when, I don't know, a couple years ago. He was in San Jose for whatever reason when you know, Kane was fighting or something. And I didn't realize that this is, you know, he coached all these guys. And at some point, I guess, to understand what they went through after college. He took two fights, and he was in his like mid-40s. He took two fights just to basically for the experience. So I didn't know that. So that was something that we were talking about when his name was brought up. So anyway, I don't know what else.
Well, since we're on the subject of UFC, the Fox show, UFC on Fox 8. We don't have the final numbers, I presume, until tomorrow. But
tomorrow, most likely. Well, for sure, tomorrow.
The overnights.
Yeah, I mean, they were what they were. It's not a good rating, but it wasn't going to get a good rating. I mean, you know, you could say that it's essentially about, you know, you and I didn't really talk rating, but we kind of did in a way, in the sense that we knew it wasn't going to be very good, and it wasn't. You know, the deal with UFC, I mean, it's the thing with UFC that is very, very different from WWE right now is that everything varies. WWE, the variations are very, very slight, unless it's like a WrestleMania or something like that. But I mean, as far as like television ratings, you know, I mean, what SmackDown's going to vary between a 1.6 and a 1.9, really a 1.7 and a 1.9. Raw is probably going to be between a 2.8 and a 3.1. You know, I mean, it's pretty darn consistent. With UFC, I mean, it's like they marketed and got it hot based on the brand, and that was a big deal a couple of years ago, but it's really not. I mean, the brand gives them a baseline, and the baseline's not that high. I think a lot of that is because they produce so much programming. Not that WWE doesn't, you know, obviously produce more, but WWE, you know, you're in control. You're in control. It's more entertainment. You know, it televises better to the masses, but it doesn't necessarily bring the excitement of the big fight that UFC does. So, you know, and I think that's, you know, where the pay-per-view numbers tell that story. But so the thing is like with UFC, I mean, it's like it's kind of amazing when you think about, you know, that they this year, you know, they had a pay-per-view that did, you know, 140,000 buys. They had another one that did 950,000 buys. So, I mean, that's a pretty big difference. And I guess you could say the same for WrestleMania and everything, but these aren't promoted as WrestleMania. I mean, it's just like it's who's on the show, and you know, and it you know, if it's a show that has matches people want to see, you know, then they will. I think that the moral of the story that I got out of Seattle more than anything else from the show, and you know, with a little bit of hindsight talk, and the rating kind of shows it, is that Rory McDonald, as big a star as he seemed to be in the BJ Penn fight, it was really more, he was a big star as an adversary of BJ Penn, but when you take BJ Penn out of the equation, people didn't really care that much about him. I mean, I know he got cheered and he got booed and all that in the building, but you remember that at the previous show in Seattle, he was at a completely different level, and he beat BJ Penn, you know, who's a legend and everything. And granted, he's a lot bigger guy and he should have won the fight, and BJ was fighting a weight class he should have been fighting in and all that, and a younger guy. But like in boxing, I just remember when Pacquiao beat Oscar De La Hoya, I was at that fight, and you know, people were going like, "Oh, you know," and that was pretty much, we all knew it was going to be, you know, most likely Oscar's last fight, and it really was. And it was like, you know, Oscar's the biggest drawing card. What happens to boxing? And Bob Arum, you know, was just like, "Well, you know, the you know, Oscar got beat by Pacquiao, so now Pacquiao's going to have that drawing power." And he didn't quite have Oscar's drawing power, but he really did. You know, he went from a 300,000 buy guy to a 1 million buy guy from beating Oscar. And that doesn't happen in MMA, and for whatever reason. And I guess it doesn't always happen in boxing either. It's not like Timothy Bradley is a 1 million buy guy. And I don't know what, but Marquez will probably be a bigger, you know, I mean, I don't know how big Marquez is going to do his next fight, but I know people in boxing and in MMA are thinking that, you know, Marquez is going to do a lot better solo in his next fight than he would have done, you know, before beating Pacquiao. So, but I mean, I guess, you know, in I don't know. It's hard. It's harder to create. I think it's harder to create stars, maybe because you don't have the mainstream media thing in MMA like you have a top tier boxing, And also, and you know, a lot of it is personality. You know, MMA stars is very personality driven, just like boxing stars. And most of the MMA stars who are great fighters aren't necessarily the best personalities. So it's tough. And then the guys who are the personalities, you know, a lot of them are good fighters, but they're not great fighters. And to be like the superstar, you kind of need an enduring superstar. You're going to have to be both, because if you are a good fighter, you know, they can't really protect you at the top level. You know, the guys, you know, the guys who are going to be champions in UFC are the best guys. And I don't care, you know, who's trying to manipulate everything like that. That's what, you know, the guys who are going to end up being champions are the best guys, and it's not the best personalities. And it's not like even in boxing years ago, where if they thought there was a guy who's really, really good who couldn't draw, he'd kind of get frozen out. And people would know it inside boxing, but outside they wouldn't. And in UFC, the guys don't get frozen out. I mean, it may take a while for them to get their championship shot, like Johnny Hendricks, but that was all a matter of timing and business. But it wasn't as if he was frozen out. It just, they had better alternatives at the time, and you know, things happen. But, you know, if there's a guy who keeps winning and doesn't have a personality, you know, he may not get the shot as quick, but if he keeps winning, he is going to get the shot.
All right, switching gears to pro wrestling. Total Divas. What'd you think of this show?
I mean, it was easy to watch. So, I mean, in that sense, you know, it's like reality show. It was a reality show, like a reality show in the sense of, I mean, the one thing that I think is kind of good about the show is that there's a lot real and there's a lot that's not real. But unless you were like one of the people who's there, you really don't know what is what. You know, I'm like watching it going like, well, I knew this is clearly not real. And then other scenes where it's like, I don't know if it is or it isn't. You know, because it's like the boyfriends are the real boyfriends. But the characters that they're playing are, you know, they're not, you know, you can tell that they're not the real characters. I mean, like Nikki Bella isn't real, you know, that she's overplaying and all that. But I mean, John Cena, she really does date John Cena. And, you know, that thing with, what was the guy's name?
Vincent.
Vincent, the Cameron or Arianne's boyfriend. I mean, that really happened. That wasn't some made-up thing. And, I mean, it's weird because, you know, you watch it and you...
Let me say something real quick. I think it's easy to tell. I shouldn't say easy. But, A, it was obvious that the Vincent thing was real because people told me it was real. But, B, you know...
But wasn't that so really childish?
But the thing is, with that particular storyline and probably with others on the show... If that were not real, then you would think that they would have had a shot of Brodus Clay yelling at Ariane, and they didn't.
They did, which they didn't, yeah.
So that kind of, you know, you if you're going to make up a storyline like that, at least have footage of it, you know what I mean? So
right. Oh, yeah.
I think there's going to be stuff on the show where they talk about, but you don't actually see what happened.
Yeah, because they didn't.
Which would indicate that it's real.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, I think that, I mean, I don't know what the staying power is going to be like. I really don't have a clue. I mean, if it, you know, I think that wrestling fans will like it because it's about wrestling. It's a different view of wrestling. There's kind of a behind the scenes thing that you don't know. Yet at the same time, there was a level of immaturity and things that like kind of surprised me. Like the, you know, Natalie, not Natalia, but Natalie Nelson, who's the red-haired girl, what, Eva Marie. It's like, you know, that thing with the hair.
I don't believe, like, that for one second. I just want you to know.
No, I couldn't for a second. Exactly. It's like you're on this job. They tell you this, and then you do this and defy them before you even have a job. And then Jane Geddes goes, well, you do look better. And it's like, there's no fucking way, right? Right? I mean, that's all. But I think that's cool in the sense that we can go scene by scene if you want to. And, you know, kind of debate what's real and what's not. And we'd probably be right more often than not. But, you know, we don't know. And I think that there's something cool. I think there's something kind of cool about that when it comes to the wrestling. I mean, like, it was easy to watch. I didn't have any issues with it. It wasn't really boring or anything, and that's what the reality show is supposed to be. You know, the rating was good. I mean, it's not as good as they purported it in the sense that, look, they had a great lead-in, and they lost more than half the viewers. But it still wasn't, you know, if you look at E's average rating, I mean, E just as a regular network, E's below Spike. I mean, it's not like this giant network like USA. So that number is a very good number. It's just not as good a number as the show that preceded it. And I think that, you know, E's probably going to be very happy. And the demo, it did very strong. So, the first episode was a success, ratings-wise. And we'll see if it stays like that or not. You know, some of the stuff, like the thing with this was almost too much, and I guess because I know too much, with Natalya and the WrestleMania thing, it's like, wait a minute, we're like 5 days before the show, and they break it to her that she's not in WrestleMania. It's like, Brian, when did we know the WrestleMania lineup? And we're not wrestlers on that show.
I think we knew the WrestleMania lineup largely by about January.
No, I know that. Yeah, okay, but not the prelims.
Sure.
Not the prelims. But the prelims, you know, like, hey, look, you can watch TV and know who's setting up angles, and she wasn't involved. And you would, you know, I mean, a good month out, let's say, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where she would know she's not in the show. And then this thing where they're breaking it to her, it's like, you're not on the show, and you're going to be chaperoning these two new people, and you've got cameras everywhere because you're filming a reality show. You know what I mean? It's like, that one I didn't buy very well.
Yeah, and the idea that the Funkadactyls didn't have outfits by halfway through WrestleMania.
That was pretty hard to believe, huh?
I thought so.
I thought so too.
Like they just showed up at the building and thought, what are we going to wear today?
Yeah.
I've got no clothes.
Yeah, like they weren't made. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. My thought watching it was that I thought the show was fine, but it didn't feel like it was enough of a train wreck to really make you want to see the next show, and the backstage stuff, which was cool to me, it was like, I don't know if it's that cool. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't like.
But most, Brian, you've been backstage.
I guess.
You've been backstage, so it's different. You're looking at, you know, for most people, they've never been backstage. Now, once they've been, is it going to be intriguing enough every week? And, of course, some of the emotions backstage, I don't know. Like, I've been backstage at a lot of shows, and granted, it's WrestleMania, and it's a different thing. But, I've been backstage at shows.
Not all that much happens.
Okay, I've been backstage at shows that were, I don't want to say WrestleMania, but pretty freaking big shows. You know what I mean? That were in their era, pretty damn big shows. And I've never seen that kind of emotional bullshit. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. I mean, that seemed, I don't get me wrong. I believe that they were all upset that they got cut. I mean, you know, when the match got cut and, you know, the other, you know, and all that. I can see that. But there were other aspects of it, you know, like, I don't know. It was very, very staged in a lot of ways, it seemed to me. But, I think that people will be intrigued for a while. I don't know. And you know, how long depends on the writers and all that. You know, now they've already broken, you know, the whole thing with the Bellas and everything. Ariane seemed like, you watch it and you question, okay, because number one, you know, she's not really much of a wrestler, and she seems like she's kind of, you know, like more trouble than she's worth, so to speak.
It's like, you don't say.
When I see her in that role and everything, I'm thinking, like, you know, if I'm watching this on TV and I'm Jane Geddes, just as an example, I'm going, like, you know, there's so many people dying to be here, and we got so many women in developmental. I mean, she's very pretty, but it's not like we don't have a horde of pretty women. And it was just like, you know, I would think, you know, what's the deal? You know what I mean? Why would we want her? I mean, Natalya's coming off as a big time baby face. I guess I'm glad for her in that sense, because she, you know, she's like actually a real wrestler who's trained to be a real wrestler, and you know but again, it's kind of hard for me. I mean, to see Natalya portrayed as this frumpy, not good looking enough thing. You know, I mean, even though that may even be how she's viewed, it's just that I don't know. I've always thought that, you know, she's certainly good looking enough for that role. So, and she can go. And, well, you know, once you're in the ring, if you're really going and you're getting sweaty, I mean, you know, how glamorous are you really? I mean, outside, sure, but anyone, you know, dress up and you get your makeup done and everything like that, and you're going to look good if you know what you're doing, and if they, you know, want you to look that way, if you know what I mean.
So next week's show, they showed a bunch of previews for the rest of the season. And I guess the big question next week will be, does it drop? And if so, how much?
Yeah. They still promoted it pretty good on Raw this week.
Oh. Yeah. And in fact, it aired immediately after Raw. So if anybody missed it.
I'll bet you they may have gotten more viewers tonight than they got on Sunday.
I would bet you that they do.
Yeah, because I mean, you're probably going off the air with 4 million viewers. Actually, the final segment. You know, you're probably going off the air with 4.5 million viewers. You're not gonna have 3 million watch the show, but you could have 2 million. You know, 2 million, and I would certainly think if they had 1.3 million, certainly going to beat 1.3 million. But this is the only week they're doing it. I mean, they made it clear this is a one-time thing.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Raw. It is, of course, it was a taped show. And they had to do a lot of shows in a very short period of time. And so this was one of those weeks where it was a very, very wrestling-heavy show.
Yeah, I mean, you can only write so much and in a week. And, you know, that much TV... It didn't feel like a Raw show. It very much felt like a taped show.
Yeah. I mean, the part of it is they put in the sound sweetening, which you always hear on SmackDown. That kind of weird whistling.
You know, the thing on that is, when I heard about the date in Laredo, I was like so looking forward to it because, you know, I've always heard like Laredo and Hidalgo are like the hottest markets for WWE as far as crowd reaction. And here, you know, they never go to they don't do Raw in those cities because the building isn't really that large. You know, it's like 8,000, which means for Raw you're talking about 5 or 6, and so that, you know, again, usually for Raw you go to bigger buildings. So they went there, and it felt like watching, you know, it felt like watching SmackDown very much, and the crowd. I mean, like, you didn't really get the feel that there's a super hot crowd, and the only time that I really got like the Laredo where I could sense that there's something different was when Del Rio was wrestling, and you know, they had the Mexico chant, and they turned it down, but you could still hear it. But even like during that match with Del Rio and Christian, I never got that feeling that you would get, which I expected to get, of the whole crowd being for Del Rio. And I bet they were, but it just didn't, I don't know, it didn't come across that way.
So to open up with Daniel Bryan and Vince McMahon having a talk. Vince came out with Brad and wanted Brad to, I guess, basically say that he'd made a bad decision or whatever. But Vince talked about how Daniel Bryan was a troll and this and that. It was not Vince's best promo, and there were about 8 million cuts in the middle of it. So I don't know if they heavily edited it. I was
probably
told that it was not a good promo. It wasn't terrible on television, but...
You know what? There was a point towards the end where I was, you know, because I had actually heard people say, you know, it's when Vince's best work. And when I was watching, you know, I think Vince is awesome, you know, as a character and everything. But there was a point late where I did think, yeah, you know, it's like, I don't know. You know, and it wasn't Vince. It was the... When he did the spontaneous combustion, the little pieces of Cena and Brian going the air deal, and it's kind of like, you know, now he's repeating lines that he would never say in real life. You know what I mean? I thought that was more the, you know, I mean, granted, if he didn't want to say it, you know, he certainly didn't have to. But,
I think also part of it was he had dialogue that was like completely preposterous. Like, he's out there trying to explain that Daniel Bryan has no talent and that he doesn't want John Cena's champion.
No talent, but he doesn't think he can beat John Cena.
Well, he called him a little troll and...
Yeah.
But I mean, it was just, it was dialogue that... How do you even pretend? You know, some of the best promos are guys that they convince themselves that what they're saying is true. And this stuff was just so preposterous that it was, I don't know. I realize that when you're a heel, sometimes you got to say things you don't actually believe. But like, this was so ridiculous. Anyway.
Well, yeah, I agree. You know, the other thing too is, you know, obviously the idea of this is to make people think that Vince doesn't like him and he's overcoming those odds, which he actually did overcome in a sense. But you know, he doesn't have to now. You know, but he's overcoming those odds. But I think that, like, at this point in the game, when he already has, to then, you know, act like he's a no talent. Like, you know, you can, you know, like he says, like, I don't think he can beat John Cena. That's that type of storyline. You know, that's cool. But treating him like he's, you know, an untalented prelim guy, from the Vince standpoint, it's almost like it's so much of a stretch that you sit there and just go, ah, you know, they're working me in a way that's you know, not even, you know, it's not even plausible.
So anyway, Daniel Bryan came out, and as Vince has talked about how he would, his dream is for Daniel Bryan and John Cena to both lose, to spontaneously combust, he said, burst into flames, and he, Vince McMahon, would end up the winner. I don't even know what the hell he was talking about.
Yeah, but I mean, if that's the case, then why didn't you just put a third guy in there, like Ryback or something?
How about Randy Orton? That's probably where it's going.
But I don't think Randy Orton's going to be added to the match.
Not added, but I think he's. I think neither man is going to be the champion at the end.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that certainly can happen, and probably, you know, I mean, I don't say probably will, but I think a lot of people think so, and nobody's going to be surprised if that's how it ends up.
So then Bryan said, "Why don't you listen to the WWE Universe?" And they all chanted, yes, yes, yes. And that was your opening segment. It was not the best. Vince, by the way, noted that not only could Daniel Bryan not beat Cena, he could not beat Kane. And he said that Bryan winning would be a historic embarrassment. Embarrassment.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
So, that was that. Anyway, then we had Mark Henry and the Usos against the Shield, and they had a long match. It went through a commercial break. That was the story of the show, matches that went through the commercial break. It's a good match. The announcers were pushing that the Usos were getting closer and closer to winning those tag team titles. I don't know how much stock I would put into that, but Shield got the win. Ambrose got the pin with his forward DDT-type deal. And
Jimmy, you know the thing? I felt watching this that there's the Shield have you know, they're strong, but it almost feels like they're down a notch.
They are. They're on the back burner for the time being.
Yeah, and I guess partially because of who they were in the you know in the ring with. But I mean the Usos, you know, the Usos are good and all that. And Mark, you know, I mean the one thing with Mark Henry is especially like in a trios match and everything because Mark Henry's different from everybody else. I think he was pretty effective. You know, he's effective in the role that he's in right now. It's not a main event role, but he's kind of, you know, I mean, I liked him here.
He cleaned the ring afterwards and sent the Shield
pack. Yeah, all by himself. I don't know about that one.
We had Ryback backstage. There were some random indie guys eating. And Ryback began to bully one of them and then gave him a tree slam through a table, sent food flying. He is a bully.
Yeah, he's doing that thing. I like that. I like that gimmick. It's something, you know, I mean, it's something. It's something as a heel, you know, a little, you know, old fashioned heel bully.
We had Kane, who last we saw had been beaten up by the Wyatt clan. He made his triumphant return in the office of Brad Maddox. He wanted the Wyatts, and Maddox said, I have a better idea. Why don't you send a message to the Wyatts by destroying Daniel Bryan? Because, of course, Vince McMahon doesn't like Daniel Bryan in the SummerSlam match, so he's hoping that Kane will kill Daniel Bryan, and then that will solve that problem. RVD versus Fandango. You know, one thing I really noticed in this match, I'd actually noted it for a while. I don't think I've mentioned it here on the air yet. Fandango bumps way too hard. And I know that probably sounds goofy because you see some guys falling off high things and doing dangerous deals. And Ziggler does these wild bumps and AJ and that sort of thing. But Fandango bumps really hard, really high on his back, and it looks like he hits his head every single time. And I know he has a history with concussions. Well, and I watch him bumping, and it's like, dude, this is probably why you've gotten these concussions. You know, it's just hard bumping high on his back. He does it every time for... It's not even for, like, big spots. It's like he'll take a punch and he'll just take a big high bump on his back. But anyway, he did the walkout finish, which sucks. And it turned this match into a waste of time.
Yeah, and it's not helping. It didn't help RVD either.
No.
Yeah. And he's another one. It's like, boy, is, you know, if you go back 2.5 months, boy, did his stock drop. And I mean, he, again, I thought they were onto something with him. I mean, like right after WrestleMania and everything, you know, it looked like it was like there was the illusion that they were more than onto something, that they were onto something gigantic, like, you know, like a new big thing. And I didn't buy that. I thought that it was kind of like, you know, it wasn't going to, you know, I just didn't see him at that level, but I did see him at like a Honky Tonk Man level. And that's, I mean, again, not the top level, but high top. You know, high mid card or whatever, however you want to, whatever, you know, phrase you want to put for that. And now he comes across as, he's really coming across as a prelim guy.
We had a meeting with AJ and Big E. AJ was complaining that they were wrestling yet again, and she kept getting speared. And she started yelling at Big E. For, I guess, never blocking the spear. He always just stood there when she got speared.
Yeah.
And exactly. She said, maybe the problem is you like watching me. Maybe you like me. And Big E got a little bit flustered, and then she began to laugh and skipped away. So she's manipulating him, or trying.
In some way, yeah. She's really good.
Yeah. Caitlin, in fact, did pin AJ with the spear. So, this feud must continue.
Well, that builds to Friday SmackDown, where they do the title match, and that leads to the Layla turn, which is interesting only because, like, there was no Layla even to be seen on this show. I mean, you would think that if they were going to build that turn, you know, and I mean, like, you know, she'd been out with her a couple times, that on the Raw right before the turn, that she would have a role in some form. You know, even if it's just not to turn, even just to be there to back up Caitlin or something.
There was a hard knee, by the way, in this match. Another long match. Probably too
long. It just seemed long.
It was long. How long was it?
4 minutes, 53 seconds.
5 minutes. That's very long for this match.
That's normal. I mean, I guess for a women's match, because they're usually like three, but...
That's right. 2 extra minutes. That's an increase of 40%.
Okay, all right.
Something like that. Anyway,
you got the percentage right.
That's pretty amazing, quite frankly. AJ flipped out afterwards, and then Dolph came out and proceeded to challenge Big E. So here we go. Dolph Ziggler, Big E, free on Raw, literally no build. And they had a match. Of course, there were not going to be a finish. AJ ended up attacking Dolph for the DQ, scratching at his eyes, jumping on his back. Big E was extremely upset that she cost him the match, started screaming at her. She flipped out. And as they're arguing, Dolph snuck in and laid out Big E with the zigzag. So there you go. SummerSlam match.
Yeah. Big E moves really well.
Big E's, you know, great.
It was really obvious here. I mean, it's not like when I'm watching it, I'm thinking like that Big E's a great worker, but it's like he moves really quick. You know, you look at that guy, and it's just surprising how quick he moves. So I think that there's, you know, I know from guys that have worked with him in Florida and everything like that, that they believe that he's got, you know, really great potential. And I think that
he's been in the business 3 years, and I think he's great.
Yeah, no, I think he's got, you know,
good promos, good wrestling. He's got a good character.
The persona's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as far as like his...
He has a great baby face in developmental. He's a good heel.
Yeah, yeah.
This guy's very talented.
He's going to be, you know, he's got something. I think he carries himself really, really well. You know, I mean, the promos are not outstanding, but just kind of like the way he walks and everything, he walks like he's somebody, and that's a big thing.
We had a John Cena, Daniel Bryan meeting, and Bryan wanted to know if what Vince McMahon had said was true.
Yeah, earlier in the show, Vince McMahon tried to brainwash Daniel Bryan into thinking that all the nice things that John Cena said about him, that John, in fact, was lying and did not believe any of them. He was just saying that. And Bryan went to Cena, and Cena just goes, well, it's Vince McMahon. And then it's like, well, he's never lied to me, which was pretty amusing in its own way. And then John, was always like happy-go-lucky or whatever, did go at the end with kind of the money thing, you know, just like, are you calling me a liar? So, you know, they're doing it about at the speed they should be doing it. You know, it's because over-the-top big feud, I don't think it's going to work with this one in match number one, if it is part of a series, which I hope it is. It may not be, because you're right, because once Randy Orton gets involved, then it, you know, I don't know if they do a three-way program from there or they just go with Randy Orton and John Cena, I don't know.
We had Del Rio versus Christian, non-title match, another long match, good action, and the finish was awesome. They'd been working over Christian's arm the entire match. Alberto dropkicked his arm into the steps. And finally, he goes for the... Christian went for the kill switch. Alberto Del Rio turned into the cross arm breaker. Christian rolled out and then applied a three-quarter Nelson for the pinfall. That was awesome.
Absolutely, yeah.
That was a great finish.
Great finish and a good match.
Yeah.
Wouldn't say a great match, but it was... It was, you know...
It was a really good match.
It was good, yeah.
So next we go to SmackDown, where they claim Del Rio will choose his challenger, but in fact there's going to be a match, and Christian is going to get one more match.
They do Del Rio and Christian for SummerSlam, which, I mean, like, I was a little bit surprised that they picked Christian with all the different candidates that were out there. I probably would have picked Van Damme right now, just because my gut is that Van Damme is not going to stay as hot. Well, he already isn't, but, you know, it's like Van Damme to me is like strike when you're hot, whereas Christian will always be kind of at this level. And it's SummerSlam and Christian in a world title match. As far as if you look at it in one way, I mean, Christian probably can have the best match with Del Rio of the various candidates if Orton's not, you know, involved in it. So, and Sheamus may be injured. I don't know. I mean, I don't think he was. He wasn't on the show or anything. So,
Cody Rhodes and Wade Barrett. They showed the recap of all of the skits from SmackDown with Wade, and it was even better with all the music in the background.
And with Sandow.
Sandow, sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was Cody and Wade Barrett was a match on Raw, and longer than you'd think for a Cody Wade Barrett match. Cody won with the Crossroads. And
I wasn't into it at all.
No.
The Cody is a babyface. I don't know if it needs time or what, but it's not like an instantaneous thing that's gotten over. You know, even though I think that it's being booked pretty well. I think it's a babyface, and I guess it maybe doesn't even matter. But I almost think he should shave the mustache, because the mustache was cool when he was a heel.
Definitely should.
Yeah. Okay. So you agree with me there? Yeah. I mean, when I'm watching it, it's not like, oh, you know, a guy with a mustache can't be a babyface. That's not what I was thinking. But when I was watching this match and he was not getting over, I started thinking, like, okay, why is this guy so not getting over when he just did his turn and the guy he's working with is such a pompous ass, was really good, and he's playing, you know, he did that nice angle on SmackDown and everything. And my thought was kind of like... And I know that those people wouldn't have seen it on TV, but they did precondition them on in the building, and he still didn't get over. And I think that part of it is the way Cody looks with that mustache. It's just, you know, he's I don't know if I want to say it, a joke isn't the word, but there's sort of like a it's sort of like that
it's a comedy thing. That's why he has that mustache. Yeah, the mustache has always been a source of comedy to his character.
The mustache is something that you make fun of him for.
Yes.
And it's like, you don't make fun of your baby face, so I think he needs to just get rid of it. And you know, the funniest part of the whole thing is I've seen interviews with him where he says, you know, he wants to get rid of it, but
well, actually, his wife wants him to get rid of it. She hates the mustache.
Okay, well, then I bet you he really wants to get rid of it then.
Happy wife, happy life, they always say.
Yeah, I mean, could you imagine, you know, if she's making it clear, he's probably better off getting rid of it for sure.
Sandow came out afterwards and was doing this interview, which was awesome, and he's talking about, made some comment about a carnival, and then he goes, "Carny folk are beneath my constitution." And Jerry Lawler was like, "Oh my God, like those are fighting words right there, making fun of carny folk."
Yeah, yeah, he was
fabulous line.
He made fun of his mustache too. He's from a family of scholars, and Cody's from a family of clowns. I don't know if clowns is the word, but yeah, his delivery is very, very good. In fact, it's excellent. You know, that's, you know, so yeah.
And Kane and Daniel Bryan, match was all right. They just didn't really.
Yeah, it was all right. It was good.
Really, you know, gel.
Yeah, Daniel Bryan can't have a bad. I don't know if Daniel Bryan can have a bad match.
He can't have a bad match, but with Kane, he can have an average match.
Yeah, I will agree. I mean, it certainly was, but it was kind of good, I thought. But yeah, not at the level of a lot of, you know, the Daniel Bryan match. I thought this had a good finish too.
The Unbreakable Small Package is back in Bryan's arsenal.
Yep.
Pin Kane with it. Then Kane chokeslammed him afterwards, and I presume the idea was to get rid of him so that the Wyatt family could come out and kill Kane.
Yeah, yeah.
With no Bryan to make the save.
Exactly, right.
And Bray Wyatt cut a promo afterwards, and it looks like it's going to be Kane versus Bray at SummerSlam.
That was certainly the idea 2 weeks ago. And
so there you go.
Looks like it still is. Bray kissed him and did that downward spiral deal. Now, he's a guy, I got to say, and you know, you really notice it in the crowd. It's almost like these guys have taken the Shield spot. When they come out, it's like that reaction the Shield used to get, and they feel like, you know, they're like the new hot fresh thing.
We had Brie Bella and Natalia, and
yeah. You know, on the Total Divas, okay, they were showing the clips for like later in the year. Or later in the season. And, you know, when Nikki got the stress fracture, and she's, you know, she still hasn't been wrestling. But she's going there, and it's like, oh, my God, my career's over. It's like, you know the horrible injuries that wrestlers get, and they come back from. It's a freaking, you know, stress fracture. I don't know. You know what I mean? It's like, it just feels like it's like... it's hard to buy, I guess.
Yeah,
my career's over because I have a minor injury.
Yeah, the career may be ending because of this stress fracture. Yeah. Anyway, this match, they went forever, and seemed that
way.
It
wasn't forever.
Seemed 10 years long. It seemed, and then
completely dead for this one too.
Nikki came out, and
she was blowing a duck whistle.
A duck whistle. And she was saying, "Quack, quack, natty, quack, quack." You see, because she's the ugly duckling of these women.
Yes, the ugly duckling.
This was the lamest.
What?
This was the dumbest, lamest.
It's like, I don't know.
Most
like,
unfunny.
It wasn't funny.
Awkward.
Awkward, yes.
Absolutely. Oh, God, it just sucked.
Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't work when you have, you know, I mean, I guess they can make Natty into a baby face and everything off of this, but it just was, like, it just felt like it was being so forced and so fake, too fake, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, this was no good. Then we had Curtis Axel and Truth, a long Paul Heyman promo that just, to me, Paul Heyman does some great promos. This seemed like a promo that was designed to just waste some time here on this taped show. And then Curtis cut a promo saying that his father had become Mr. Perfect, but he was more perfect than perfect. And match didn't go very long. Punk ran out, went after Axel and Paul. Paul was hilarious, trying to not get over the barricade. Don't even know how he got stuck on top of it. It seems to just kind of, I don't know. It just didn't seem physically possible to Paul Heyman to get stuck on that guardrail, but he managed it. And yeah, Punk ran them all off and everyone cheered for CM Punk. And so the match is on. There you go. Not much of an angle, really.
Oh, well, I mean, the angle is going to be with Brock, who's going to be back next week.
So, what do we have next?
Hunter and Stephanie.
That's right, Hunter and Stephanie.
I guess, is it Hunter's birthday today?
It was. They said happy birthday. And apparently he's, I guess, 43, is that correct?
I think 44.
Let me find out.
44.
44? Because Vince, first off, they mentioned the birthday. And then during this promo here, Hunter is yelling at Vince. And Vince
said, I you know, he didn't want John Cena as champion. He wanted Daniel Bryan as champion. He goes, I want someone like you as champion, only 20, 23 years younger.
Yeah, 20 or rather 23 years. So I presume that meant, I guess the champion has to be 21.
No, he wants the new guy coming in to be 21, who can...
Yeah, so 23, 44 minus 23 is 21, so there you go.
Right, yeah.
But you can't be 20, you got to be 21 to be on the main roster. Vince was very specific here. So then
Or the writers were, you know, I mean, we don't know how Vince's math is.
So. I'm thinking it would be better or worse than mine. Probably.
Well, do you know how old you are?
Right now?
Yes.
Let me think about this. 38.
Oh, God. You have to think about it, too?
Like, I had to think about it for a second.
You're like talking to Vince.
38. I know. I guarantee I can spell better than Vince then.
Okay.
That's a fact.
I think you're 37 for some reason.
Maybe I am.
Well, you're okay. Now I got to do the same.
1975. Okay, I just turned 38.
What's your birthday? And I'll
just turned 38.
What?
June 12, 1975. 38.
So you just turned 38, yeah.
Just turned 38, yeah.
Wow. You look younger than that.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, you look considerably younger than that.
I feel a lot older. No.
So, you know what? So you're actually, I thought that you were like the same age as like the average viewer of those shows on E. And I think you're actually like maybe like a year older.
Oh no.
Yeah, you're kind of in their demographic, except you're not, you know, except you're a guy. But but whatever.
Oh, my wife watches E. So sometimes
yeah,
I see what's
I'm sure
on there.
She does. Did she like the show? Or did she even watch it?
Oh, she didn't watch Total Divas.
Okay.
We at some point it may happen, but didn't work out last night.
Okay.
Anyway,
I wouldn't you know, it's not like a game change, you know, like something that you got to watch.
It's not must see TV.
Not for her.
No. Anyway, so Stephanie then said that Daniel Bryan needs a corporate makeover.
Yeah, maybe they can have him dye his hair red, too.
It'll be the suit and tie.
Probably.
The old Steve Austin suit and tie.
Yeah, yeah. And shave the beard.
Shave
the beard.
Which
means he loses the bet, although Jason Reddick, I think, already...
He lost the bet months ago.
Right, yeah, already gave up. Already gave it up. People were making too much fun of him in baseball.
God, I wonder if they really will shave him.
Mm-hmm. You know what? They should, if you think about it. Because
I got a better idea.
The big beard was more for comedy, and he's now in a spot where he really shouldn't be comedy.
But here's the problem. I have an idea, and I'll tell you why it's not going to work.
Okay.
So they can't shave the beard because he just had a damn shirt come out that says fear the beard. Or respect the beard.
Well, you're
respect the beard.
You're kind of right, but...
So what they do is they demand...
Get a new shirt with the beard shaved.
They demand he shaves his beard, and he refuses. So they add the stipulation to the pay-per-view that if he beats John Cena, he gets the title. But if he loses, he has to shave the beard.
Good one.
Or they say... Let me think about this.
No, that's not bad. I like that.
You could do that. I was trying to think of a way to do a dusty finish.
I like that. And then he loses and shaves the beard. He loses because Randy Orton screws it up somehow. And then Randy Orton steals the title as well. Or he could beat John Cena. Randy Orton beats him. And Vince demands he shaves the beard because he lost. And they make, instead of the stip, if John Cena beats you, it's like if you lose. Rather than, so everyone, when he, so then he beats John Cena. and everyone thinks he saved his beard, then Randy Orton wins the title from him, and then Vince McMahon points out that it's in the contract that if you lose at SummerSlam, they stipulate it that way, then you lose your beard. So that way he wins to save his beard, and he still loses, and he still gets it shaved.
That's right.
That actually saves him better.
That's a double whammy. Double whammy.
Yeah. Not.
So he had the Cena Ryback tables match, and
it was long.
It was a long match.
Yeah, it was. You know,
a lot of weird spots.
The house show matches are usually 10, so I figured they were going to go exactly 10. They went like almost 16. And it was okay. You know, it's like it wasn't good, but it was okay. It didn't feel like a Raw main event to me.
It felt like a post-Raw main event, which, in fact, it had been for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it felt to me like guys going through their paces of a match as opposed to really having a match.
Yeah. So anyway, they had the steps. They battled with the steps. They they tried to put some creative spots in there for a tables match, but I don't know. It was all right. It was fine. Cena finally did a dodge and put him through a table leaning in the corner for the finish with the FU. And end of the show was Bryan dancing out. He snatched the belt. He teased that he was going to give it to Cena, but then he snatched it away. And then Cena snatched it away from him. And then Daniel Bryan said, yes, yes, yes. That's how the show ended.
Yeah.
Not really a... Not the best angle I've ever seen to build up SummerSlam, but they still got some time.
We still got 2 more weeks. So this is not the go home angle, and this is not the final angle. So I wait 2 weeks. I mean, you know, I'm not saying it's going to be good. I'm just saying wait 2 weeks because it was fine for this week.
All right. The other note, real quick, just we should mention the G1.
Yes, I'm like completely like baffled. Because I just feel like as far as business decisions go, this ranks with one of the worst ones.
It was made very clear. Before you go any further, we should mention that it was made very clear in an email that that you must buy all shows for $150. They are not being sold individually. It was not like this was like a screw up or a confusion. It was stated explicitly.
It was stated very clearly in the
There will not be separate tickets for each event.
Right, right. So you spend $150 for all nine, or you don't get any. And I just feel that is mind-boggling. Just because, I mean, even with me, who was super looking forward to it, it's like, I don't know. I mean, I wasn't going to watch all nine. I don't got time to watch all nine. I was thinking, you know, again, three. I'd pay $75 for three. I mean, it's fine. You know, it's not like I'm thrilled about it, but I don't have an issue with it. But $150 for three, no, not happening. So, you know, I can't imagine. I mean, you're talking about you have the people who have. I'm not saying you have to have a ton of money, but you got to have a ton of time, or else you can't justify it. And that's the key. It's like. I can't justify it because of the time. I don't have time to watch nine house shows, you know, even though I'm sure they're going to be good in an 11-day period. And because of that, it's like it's hard for me to justify that figure. So I think that they're just making a huge mistake in this one. So anyway, that's all I got to say on that.
It's a very strange decision. I suppose they can... when's the G1 start? Is it Thursday?
Thursday.
Yeah, so I guess a little late to change their mind.
They could change their mind tomorrow. I don't know who to email and complain to. I mean, I guess when I complain in this week's issue, they'll see it. But that's probably going to take Thursday, Friday. That'll be too late. If they had told us 2 weeks ago that this is how they were going to do it,
this newsletter's online. What are they waiting for? They have to get the paper copy.
No, but I don't. Do you think that they read it right away?
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know either. I just know that they read it, but I don't know. I think they still get the paper copy, by the way.
Well, why don't you you rant and rave? So by the time they read it, they'll have time to make the semifinals and finals available as separate tickets.
By that point, it's already kind of too late.
Well, no. I mean, I would probably just personally prefer to just watch the finals.
Yeah, I hope that they do that. I just wish that they had made this announcement 2 weeks ago so I could have complained for 2 weeks and then and everyone could have complained for 2 weeks because I can't imagine almost anyone except for like a very small percentage of people who buy these things, even if you get it, being unhappy about it.
All right, let's do a couple of the questions here. This person knows Kevin Steen's compilation DVD, Hell Rising, which included a shoot interview, is no longer available in the ROH store. Is there any truth to the rumor the company pulled it because of Jim Cornette?
Yeah, they did. I don't know all the details, but they made, as one of the deals they made is that neither side would disparage the other. And by releasing the Kevin Steen interview, that would have violated that agreement. So, in fact, when they, that was what happened.
All righty. This person here says, what is the deal with Kyle O'Reilly and his seeming inability to get into Canada? It's weird since he's Canadian. He hasn't been in the last several ROH shows in Toronto.
I don't know, but obviously there's a story there, right? I mean, when they did TV and everything there, they had to work around him not being there. By the way, the TV taping that they did over the weekend, it sounded like it was really good.
Good.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that this Toronto house show that they got Saturday, I wish it was an iPay-per-view. I know they don't do them anymore, but this is a really good card. There's there's some cool matches on this card this week.
No Jay Briscoe back yet though.
Not for a while. But Edwards and Richards.
Well, there'd been talk he would be back at the Toronto show.
That's right. Originally Toronto was the first possible date back. That's right. But yeah, Richards and Edwards against Rocky Romero and Alex Kozlov and for the tag team titles, and then a whole bunch of singles matches in the tournament. And Kushida's on the card. It's a cool card.
All right. This person says, I heard the October WWE pay-per-view is called Battleground. Are they planning to have a War Games match on the card?
I don't know the answer to that, but they did just change the name in the last 2 weeks. So,
are you sure? Because I'd heard I seem to think I've heard Battleground for a while now.
Really? I mean, I just heard the change like 2 weeks ago.
Maybe
it was the first I heard of it. I don't know.
Alrighty, a couple more here. I'm watching Hogan Slaughter from Mania 7. Was Hogan Warrior 2 supposed to headline Mania 7? If so, when and why did they change plans?
It was talked about, but I don't think they really wanted to, because here's the deal. When Warrior beat Hogan, the idea was that Warrior would be champion for years, and Hogan would be... It'd be the Bob Backlund, Bruno Sammartino thing, where Warrior would be on one tour as world champion defending the title, and Hogan would be on another tour as Hulk Hogan, because Hulk Hogan can draw with or without the championship. So you'd have two big drawing tours, in theory. So Hogan was not supposed to get the championship back, because there was no point at that point. And they soured on Warrior when Warrior didn't draw, and they went back to Hogan. And Slaughter, of course, being the intermediary, because they didn't want Hogan to beat Warrior. So I don't really think, it's like they left it open-ended. They could do it again, but I don't think, and they may have even told Hogan that they were going to, maybe Vince, during the first one, may have said, to get him to lose the first one, we'll do it again, but not anytime soon, and you'll win the second one type of a thing. And I don't know that I just know that it could have been like that, but it was one of the things that if they didn't have anything else, it was something that they could always go back to, but it was not something that they wanted to go back to because they didn't want Hogan to beat Warrior. The idea was to keep them apart. I think that the idea probably would have been like Warrior defending against, the top heel, and Hogan against some big, big guy, kind of like what they did with SummerSlam, where Warrior defended against Rick Rude, and then Hogan wrestled Earthquake. So I think that that was probably the dynamic they would probably have done originally for WrestleMania as well. But, you know, things happened, and they went back to Hogan.
All right, and last one here. This person says, I'm watching the January 18, 1997 episode of Shotgun Saturday Night. It's night before the Royal Rumble in San Antonio. Terry Funk makes a surprise appearance, gets into a pull-apart brawl with Steve Austin. They also brawl into the crowd at the end of the show. Was this supposed to lead to a feud between the two? I don't seem to remember any interaction between the two after this.
No, it wasn't supposed to lead to a feud between the two. They just did it. The thing that I remember, it's like obviously they must have in some way decided they were going to work together, and it was pretty clear, you know, but Shotgun Saturday Night was kind of like supposed to just be this real wild show. They had a different idea for it, so it wasn't necessarily something that was going to be big to lead to a pay-per-view as much as just some wildness to have. But I do remember talking to Terry Funk right around in that week, and he went there to that show to get over, and he's really smart at getting over, and he came back with, these guys are so good that you can go in there and get over to the crowd, and they will shoot in a certain way, and you don't get over on TV. And he was like, it was like, in a sense, he knew he didn't get as over as he thought he could, and he knew he did to the crowd. I mean, it was kind of like a weird compliment, but also a disappointment in the sense that he knew he wasn't supposed to steal the show. He knew he did live, and he knew that on TV he didn't. It was just an interesting, very interesting comment about how he kind of perceived that, because I don't remember anyone else ever, you know, seeing that way. You know, that kind of a description of that, because, you know, they just remember that, like, that conversation where it was, you know, he had a lot of confidence in his ability to get over because he was really good at it as far as riling up crowds and things like that. He was really, you know, I mean, he was old then, but mentally, Terry Funk, I think, was one of the best workers as far as to a live crowd, because he could vary his game and would vary his game to get over. He would figure out a way to get over. I mean, I think I've told the story. I know I have, you know, like in the sense of I've seen shows where they were dead crowds and Funk came out and he just, like, within seconds just got them going. He just understood how to do that. So, you know, and I mean, he went there to, that's what he, you know what I mean? He wasn't brought in to be a focal point of anything, but he darn sure was going to get himself over, and he darn sure figured out that, you know, you can't get over there unless they, you know, if they don't want you to get over, they're going to make sure that you don't.
All right, everybody, on that note, we're going to wrap it up. Tomorrow, Danny Davis is going to be on the show, Ohio Valley Wrestling. They're doing their first ever iPay-per-view coming up here very soon. Ohio Valley Old School. Talk about TNA, obviously. A lot of stuff to talk about there. And a lot of other topics. So back issue of The Observer's coming up. New issue of The Observer and Figure Four coming up as well. Did a ton of shows over the weekend, so make sure you check those out. And that's it from here. We'll talk to you again after a while.